the talk. So I can honestly say that this topic does not fit very well with for this conference. It's really power and technology. So let me start with a short introduction. So in the past decade, we've seen striking new observations and advancements from cosmology from a qualitative to a quantitative science. And furthermore, new observational data are expected to come over the next decade that will lead to an unprecedented era of precision photography. So this presents a unique window to physics at Planck scale and also a challenge for fundamental theory. Now, over the same 10-year period, we've also seen, in a sense, a start of a change of paradigm in fundamental theory. We've seen the new ideas in fundamental theory dominated research, mainly photographic dualities. And so let me remind you here what I mean by holography. So holography states that the theory which includes gravity can be described by a theory with no gravity in one pure dimensions. So it is natural to ask how cosmology fits into this general framework, because holography was meant to be as a general framework for any gravitational theory, particularly it should include the discussion of cosmology. So the purpose of this work is to propose a very great holographic framework for inflationary cosmology. So, and here I can also pause and explain what do I mean with holography for cosmology. So any such proposal should have at least two elements. It should say what the field theory is, and should also describe how it can be used to describe cosmological observables. In particular, after we define the duality, the new description should recover established results and the results were in the regime where the weakly coupled description is valid, because we know that that description is okay. It just provides a reformulation of the usual description. But then once we have the duality, we can obtain new results by using the duality in the regime where the weakly gravitational description is not valid. Namely, we should recover results which depend crucially on Planck scale physics. So that's the idea. So this talk is going to be based with the work I'm doing with a postdoc in Amsterdam with Paul McFadden, and it should be here soon. So the outline of this talk is as follows. Okay, this was my introduction. So next, I will remind you about what are cosmological observables that I would like to recover by doing a holographic computation. So that should be well known for the cosmology part of the audience, and hopefully will be useful. Would be to remind the holography part of the conference of what these are. And then we will move to the main part. So I will use the so-called domain wall cosmology correspondence to relate cosmology to objects with holographic description we know. And this is going to give us the springboard to define holography for cosmology. And then we will see that this does lead to a reformulation of the use of cosmological observables in terms of the data of the three-dimensional, a strongly coupled three-dimensional quantum field theory. So that part, one can say, is like a theorem. So we just reformulate the known quantity in terms of something that we know is data strongly coupled QFT. And then we'll move to a description beyond the regime where the weakly coupled gravitational regime. And here we'll introduce what one might call holographic phenomenology for cosmology. So we'll introduce phenomenological models that we'll see that it's fairly easy to come up with models that accurately describe all current observational data. And then I will conclude. Okay. So let's start from the beginning. Let me review cosmological observables. So so we'll discuss in this talk single scale or four dimensional inflationary models that follow from an action of that form. Now, both, let's say, the fact that this is a single field is just for simplicity, and also the fact that I'm using here a canonically normalized field, which is also for simplicity, all of this can be relaxed. All of this is going to be true for arbitrary potential. And also, I'm going to assume, again, for simplicity, and also because of what the observation tells us, that we have a specially part background. So then, usually, when we want to compute the cosmological observables, we put up the metric. So here is, and I'm going to be in a gauge indicated over here. So for single theorem models, the vector perturbation can be gauged away. And then this guy over here can be written in the form I indicate over there, where this piece here is transverse scalar, transverse traceless. And then we take that, these two pieces together, and we form a gauge invariant combination. After we, Now, for background solutions, which have a which depend on the scalar field phi of tau that have only isolated zeros, one can establish the following results. First of all, one can establish that the second order field equations can be reduced to first order field equations, which I give over here. So we use the fact that phi of tau, phi of t has only isolated zeros to invert the relation between pi and phi. And then we plug this in into the definition of the Hubble constant. So this gives me one equation. And then the equation for phi is the dot missing here, is given by that expression where now the prime indicates derivative with respect to phi. And then the potential is can be shown to be written in terms of H in this fashion. Now, this was first found about, well, in 1990 by Born and Solopek using Hubble-Jacobi formalism. And as I will review later on, one finds exactly the same description by using this domain wall cosmology correspondence and finds a relation between supersymmetry and what one might call pseudo-supersymmetry. Now, once we have, with respect to phi. So they should be derivative. They should be
oh,
yeah.
Okay, so now. Sorry, so when you say only isolated zeros, you mean zeros of phi dot? Or
no, this so here means that I can piecewise convert the relation between phi and e.
Yes.
And this requires phi, phi dot to only have isolated zeros.
Yes.
So this defines what one might call Hubble function. So now, in terms of this Hubble function, the equations of the perturbation state are very simple form, which is the ones I give over here, where this epsilon here is the slower parameter, but I'm not going to assume in this talk that, that epsilon is small. Okay, so now, once we have the perturbations, then we can go on to discuss power spectra and non-Gaussianities. So in the inflationary paradigm, cosmological perturbations are assumed to originate from subparameter scales as one fluctuations. So what we need to do is, so usually we assume that the perturbations are weakly coupled, so we can use just the standard methods of quantum field theory in terms of backgrounds to quantize the theory. So we quantize the perturbations in the usual manner. So this gives gives rise to these 2-point functions, where these red quantities are the mode functions. Now, once we have those, then the power spectra are given by the expressions we give over here, where this is the scalar power spectrum, and this is the tensor power spectrum. And this quantity over here, and this one, are just the constant playtime values of the cosmological mode function. Now, this expression here assumes that I have used as initial condition the Banks-Davis vacuum, But this is another thing that I can actually relax when I move to the holographic description. Okay, now in preparation to the holographic description, let me rewrite the power spectrum in a way that it would be useful later. So I define response functions by using by these relations. Now this capital phi over here are the canonical momentum densities. And then I can use the Wronskian relations that relate the mon functions and the time derivative using these expressions to rewrite the expression that appears in the previous slide, this or that, in terms of the mon function. And this is given by this simple expression. So as we will see later on, this expression over here will be directly related to holographic two-point functions. Okay. Okay. So this was the review of the theory part. Now let me also briefly review the actual observations. So the scale of power spectrum is okay. Given by an expression of that form. And observationally, we know that the amplitude is very small and is given by that expression. Then this index over here is the scalar index, and if n is equal to 1 and this is 0, then this amplitude will have no scale dependence. So this is a scale invariant spectrum, and observationally, this is very close to 1. This can also run. And the running is defined by that relation. And observationally, this is consistent with 0, which makes the values favor it a little bit. Then we have the tensor power spectrum, again, given an expression of that form. Finally, we haven't seen tensors yet, so this is the only upper limit on this. But we do have a good idea about the tensor to scalar ratio, which turns out to be a very small number. So that's this all the data about interrelated two-point functions, but the actual data don't have to be Gaussian, so we may have non-Gaussianities, and these are related to higher point functions. For instance, if we consider the three-point function, this is given by an expression of the form I give over here, where this is a specific function of the momenta, and depending on how we pick this momenta, this define this non-Gaussianity number as an out. So the different values depending on how we pick the momenta over here. But the bottom line is that the observations impose constraints on that number. So eventually, we would like to have a theory that will give a prediction to this set of numbers. This is not just one number, it's a set of numbers depending on how we pick the momenta over there. Okay, so this was my review of the actual observation. So now we're going to move on to starting how to set up holography. So for that, I'm going to review the domain wall cohomology correspondence. So domain wall spacetimes are spacetimes which are given, which are of this form. So these are basically, you have to specify a function for f of r. And another function, A of R. Now, the name domain wall space time is a little bit misleading, and it's in a sense, it's a historic accident. So, historically, one used the time of space time to interpolate between different asymptotics to have a domain wall at R equals 0, and A of R will take one value on one side and different value on the other side. But for me, this is just the name, so when I say domain wall space time, I mean any expression. That form. Now, this type of spacetime solves the equations that follow from that action. And then one can show very generally that there is the following correspondence. So, for every domain wall solution of a model with potential V bar, there is a corresponding FRW solution of a model with potential with the opposite sign. So this is something which I'm sure it was observed by many people over the past, but this is really one wonderful point. That's what I want to emphasize here. And this correspondence also applies to open and closed FRWs, which correspond to domain walls. Actually, yesterday, Mr. Banstock, we've seen also an example of this, because in that case, the correspondence was between the instant zone and the FRW that connected it. That's also an example of this correspondence. This is one-to-one, so it works both ways. Yeah? If it's one-to-one correspondence, so for any solution of the one, there's a solution of the other, and vice versa. So for any, so if you give me an FRW solution for the theory with potential Z, then there is a corresponding domain wall solution for the theory with potential minus Z. So that's, yeah, so this correspondence can be understood as an algebra.
Rotating time. Is that what you're rotating the time?
So you take T.
But it doesn't have to be real, right? I mean, a real or instance.
Yeah. So the point, okay, that's what they say here, right? So the sign of the flip in the sign of V, or it is that the scalar field remains real. So this is, let's say, the non-trivial part in proving this.
So what do you analytically continue?
So I take R to T.
R to T and Z.
And that's the only thing I'm doing.
Okay.
Yeah. And now, and there's an equivalent way to do this. Instead of taking R to T, and I take V bar to minus V. And if we didn't consider just flat, the flat case, if we had also the curvature, this goes to minus K. So this is the full.
So maybe I'm not taking on board your point that it's a misleading name, but lots of potentials don't have domain wall solutions.
But if you have one, that has a domain wall solution,
then you can go
back.
The
corresponding, if you flip the sign,
okay.
Then
it corresponds. So that is a constraint.
Yeah, of course.
So,
yes.
So, okay.
Yeah. But so I think because this is not requiring that this suspended energy has a domain wall, right? And so the class of potentials there is much larger than those that we give the topology.
I will move on. I will discuss a little bit energy.
Okay.
If I don't discuss it sufficiently, you can remind me. Yes.
Because if the domain wall is reflection symmetric, two sides are equivalent, then isn't the double width rotation automatically real?
Well, in some cases it would be automatically real, but this kind of conditions are indeed that.
I think
you're really
subtle enough that
these
have the main walls.
Usually,
two sides. That's what you
just
said. It doesn't have two sides.
It doesn't have to have two sides.
Sure.
But actually, the better way of stating this is to actually keep the same potential, but change the Newton constant in the y indicator over here. So here I have a Newton constant there. So just flip the sign of kappa squared. And at the same time, I keep this combination real, so that's an equivalent state.
So
the same potential, yes.
The main one is space time, it's a billion space time?
No, it's not. In this context, actually, it's not really playing a role whether it's Euclidean or whether it's Lorentzian, so it just changes whether I sum here with the delta ij or with the epsilon ij. So it really holds in all cases. This formula here is written for the Euclidean case, but this is not really nice. In a sense, the triality is not a duality, it's a triality.
What is a triality?
It's a connection between three things. So one thing is the Euclidean domain wall, the other thing is the Lorentzian domain wall, and the other thing is the FRW. And one corresponds. So given a theory that has one, then the theories that have the other. This domain wall spacetimes have remarkable properties. Which is found by using a framework called H symmetry. So provided that, the derivative of this only have isolated zeros, then the following properties hold. So first of all, the spacetime admits a covariantly constant spinner, namely admits a solution of this equation, where this covariant derivative is given by the use of a covariant derivative plus an additional piece that contains a so-called H potential. And this H potential is actually determined by the solution itself. So this spinner here is called fake filling spinner. So maybe this theory that I started over here, or actually part of the supergravity theory, then this fake superpotential would be the superpotential that appears in supergravity. But that's a generalization, so the theory doesn't have to be part of, say, supergravity theory, just a bosonic theory. But nevertheless, one can define a notion of covariant derivative and define a notion of Killing Skinner. Now, the existence of this fake Killing Skinner during this perturbative and non-perturbative stability of four non-singular domain wall spacetimes. So the perturbative stability is always false and it's easy to understand, especially it's easy to understand if the domain wall is a spot PDS, which we will discuss later. It just follows that once you have this framework, then all perturbations satisfy the DF bound. And the non-perturbative stability comes from a generalization of Witten's inorder proof of stability of Minkowski space. Now, all these domain wall spacetimes also solve first-order BPS equations, and these first-order BPS equations just follow from the fact that we have this fake Killing Skinner equations. So the same way that if you solve for stiff metric solutions, stiff metric solutions solve first-order equations. So these are kind of remarkable properties of all of this spacetime. Now, since we have the correspondence with cosmologists, this means that they're corresponding analog of these properties for cosmologies. In particular, we show in that paper that cosmologies that meet also covariantly constant spinners, which are now solve this equation. And where I had W, this is replaced by I times H, where H of phi is the sample function I defined earlier. So we call the spinner the fake pseudo-Killing spinner. And the first equation, the first of the equations I discussed earlier, which in the studies of Wall and Solopek follow from the application of Hamilton-Jacobi theory, now we shall that just follow from fact to have this spinorial first of the equation. Now this is a new fermionic symmetry, which is always present in cosmology. And what is the implications of this is still to a large extent unexplored. Okay, now back to domain wall spacetimes. So now I'll start connecting with holography. Now domain wall spacetimes and the very prominent. Yes. 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 So this is not so over here. I don't have necessarily any spinners in my theory. But I'm saying that this theory, which is just gravity coupled to scalar field, admits bosonic spinners that solve this equation. Yeah. It's the same, again, it's similar in spirit with the proof of stability of Minkowski spacetime using spinorial methods, because you can just have just standard Einstein gravity, and then you say that the existence of certain bosonic spinners guarantee that there's a certain properties of the spacetime, and that's the stability. That's similar in spirit. So we just have a theory with bosonic fields. And this theory with bosonic fields admits spinners that satisfy certain equations, namely that one. But they're still spinners, right? They're still spinners. Yeah. I don't think so. I don't think it's related, but sure. So, so it's not unlikely that there may be a link, but I don't know a link. But, I mean, it's true that, so okay, there is one link that I know. So in the usual case, when you have a Killing spinner, then if you take bilinears, these are Killing vectors of the background. In this case, if you follow exactly the same procedure, then you get conformal Killing vector following Killing vector. So from that perspective, there's a beginning of a link. Any other questions? Okay, so back to the domain walls. So the main, certain types of domain walls describe holographic RG plus. So let me briefly describe this. So let's first go back to AGS. So AGS D plus, the AGS D plus one metric is a unique metric whose isometric group is the same as the conformant group in the dimension. And this is one of the main reasons why the bulk rule of conformant group theory is under consider. Now the domain wall spacetime are the more general solutions with isometric group to the Poincaré group in dimension. And this implies that if we have a conformant theory that has a holographic dual, then the bulk solution must be of the domain wall type, just to match the symmetry. Now there are two types of domain wall spacetimes whose holographic interpretation is fully understood by now. So the first type is domain walls which are asymptotically AGS. So this means that this function A of R approaches R as we go to infinity, and the scalar field goes to zero as we go to infinity. And this corresponds to a quantum field theory, which in the UV approaches a fixed point. And the fixed point is the conformant field theory, which is dual to the AGS, which is approached as we go to infinity. Now, again, here are the two cases to discuss, depending on how fast this approach is zero, what is the rate at which this approach is zero. So depending what is the precise function of phi bar of r as r goes to infinity, we either have a quantum field theory, which is a relevant deformation of the conformal field theory, or we have the conformal field theory in the non-conformal like. Like for instance, n plus 4 in Coulomb. So the second type of the domain wall is understood only very recently and has asymptotics that they give over here. So we have asymptotically, we have logarithms like rather than powers. And specific cases of such spacetimes are the ones which are obtained by taking the near horizon limit of the non conformal brain. In the usual AGS CFT was obtained by starting with these three brains, taking in your horizon limit. And these cases come from taking the corresponding thing for the non-conformal brains. Of course, this was done already soon after the ADS paper in 98. But of course, the understanding of the duality in detail was only done very recently. Now, these solutions describe quantum field theories that have a dimensionful coupling constant. And it describes this quantum field theory in the regime where the dimensionality of the coupling constant drives the dynamics. This is equally precise. Yeah, so in the other case, so indeed, so this is not going to be, we have to kind of, there is a point where you leave the regime where the dimensionality of the coupling constant drives dynamics, and then you have to go to another regime, and you have to use another description there. For example, in the case of, let's say, the D4 brain, then there's going to be a point where you draw another dimension, and you have the description terms of M5 brains. That's an example where you have such a process with a different description. But if you are, let's say, stay within the regime where the dimensionality drives the dynamics is equally precise as the other. So you can do all the computations you do in the other case, you can do both. Any other questions? And in the next slide, I'm going to tell you what this corresponds to. So let's see what so the first type, the asymptotically AGS domain walls, are mapped to inflationary cosmologies that approach the sitter at play time. And the second type that I just described is mapped to solutions that asymptotically approach the parallel scaling solution given by that expression. So now, to describe how to apply holography for cosmologies, let me first briefly review the basic holographic dictionary in the standard case. So in the standard case, So n can be anything with n greater than 1, which is in place. Although it may still be possible to have a holographic description with n less than 1, but at this point, at least we start something with n greater than 1. Yeah, you will see it in the slide. So then we'll end up with a domain wall, which currently we don't understand holographic description. But the ones, that's why I said in the beginning, I'm focusing now on inflationary cosmology, because for this case, the correspondence relates to cases, we like to understand the cases where you already understand. The domain walls, the holography of the domain walls is fully understood. Yes.
Just some messy thing that you're not.
Yeah,
it's not easy to
say. Yes. Actually, later on in the second part of the talk, I won't even have a geometric description of the early time. I won't only have a quantum filter description. Some messy stuff, which we don't even have the language to describe currently. But nevertheless, you can use the duality to understand the late time behavior. Any other? Okay, so now again, let's briefly review the correspondence. So the first part is that there is a one-to-one correspondence between Laplace gauge invariant operators, all of the boundary theory, and Bach gravity modes. So in particular, the Bach metric corresponds to the energy momentum density of the boundary theory, and Bach scalar field corresponds to scalar operators, for example, F mu squared, pi to Bach, etc. And correlation functions of these gauge invariant operators can be extracted from the asymptotic of the Bach solution. So now let me explain a little bit more the second part. So to understand this, we need to know a little bit about the solutions of Einstein equations with negative cosmological constants. Now for the metric, the most general asymptotic form for in four Bach dimensions look like what I wrote over here. So this metric over here is the metric of the space-time where the boundary theory lives. And as such, it's also the source for the boundary energy momentum tensor. That is here is locally determined in terms of that. And this I will discuss in the next slide. Now to give you some intuition about this form of the metric, if I replace this with eta ij, this is the AJ T+1 metric. If I replace this with a Minkowski metric, this gives solution to practically AGS metric. And a more general case where this is completely general is only practically a local AGS, meaning that the local geometry at infinity is the same as AGS, not a global property. They're not going to be oscillating with the minimum discriminant for the scalar field corresponding isolation from zero. If the scalar field is massive, then it would be also oscillating. Very massive and also oscillating. Now we have matter fields. For example, scalar fields, these have a similar expansion. So it's going to be, again, a term that goes to zero as r goes to infinity, and then there is a piece. So this term over here is the source of the dual operator. All the pieces from here up to there are locally determined in terms of that, and there is another one with meaning I will explain in a minute. And again, this delta is the dimension of the dual operator, which is related to the mass of that one formula. Now, if we use the formalism of holographic normalization, then we find a very precise relation between correlation functions and asymptotics In particular, in this context, the expectation value of the stress energy tensor is just given by the vector system I discussed earlier, and the expectation value of the dual operator is given by this piece over there. Now, this correlator, one can show, again, in public generality, they satisfy all expected world identities from that one expects from a dual CFT. In particular, there is a diffeomorphism worth identity, and there is also a worth identity. So this is one point function. Now, if we're interested in higher point functions, yes. OK, so the psi here, so the psi is locally related to phi naught. This, so asymptotic, we're not determining this. But this is determined by global properties like the regularity of the exact solution in the interior. And this is what gives rise to a correlation function. So this piece over here is related to the Kalman anomaly. Yes. So it's because you turn on the chart. So this is the usual work identity that you would derive in from the field because you have the Lagrangian and you add it phi not O. So then your action is this. And then if you were trying to derive the water identity, because you have a new coupling, that you get that. And if the new coupling is just a constant, then of course it becomes yes. So this now, this relation defaults for both the European and Lorentz signatures. So the so there is a whole story of how to actually to change the state. This does not change this relation, but it does change the just the regularity, the problem that you solve in order to determine the exact solution. But that's a whole new talk about. But this, I mean, it was not clear a priori that this relation will not change. And it turns out they will not change. This is the last case of that with machine of an earth. But if I have time, you know, we can, because this is the point where, so I said earlier that the cosmological perturbations, the power spectra that I gave was for with the Bunch Davis initial condition. If one would want to change that to some other initial condition, then one would have to go back here and discuss ADS-CFT with Lorentzian signature and understand how to implement different initial states. But that has now been understood. And then you would use that to go back. But this formula will not change. Any other questions? Okay, so now this relation here was one point function in the presence of sources. I haven't set the sources to zero. So this means if I want to compute higher point functions, the only thing I have to do is I have to differentiate functionally the previous relation with respect to sources. For instance, suppose I want to compute an endpoint function of stress energy tensors. This is going to be given by the n minus 1 derivative of G3 with respect to the sources, and then setting the sources to the background value. So this means that if we want to solve the theory, what we need to do is we need to understand the relation of this red coefficient to the function, to the sources. So currently, this can only be obtained perturbatively. So this means that if we want to compute two-point functions, we need to solve the linearized fluctuations. If we want to do three-point functions, we need to solve the quadratic fluctuations, etc. So now let's implement this to holographic RG plus. So what we need to do is we need to solve the fluctuations around the background. So here again, I parameterize the fluctuations around the background. And you may already observe a certain similarity with the formulas I had earlier about cosmological perturbations. Again, this here is the transverse spaceless part, and you can here I form engaging line combination of part of the metric fluctuation and scalar fluctuation. And the edge that appears over here is related to the fixed potential. Now one can process this, and the end result is this equation. And comparing to the cosmological perturbation I showed you earlier, we find that this equation exactly maps to the other one, provided I continue the momenta by the way I indicate. Let's take two bars here to be minus IQ. This equation becomes exactly the equation for cosmological perturbation. Oh, yeah. So this is the momenta. So I Fourier transform and over the boundary coordinate. Yes. So over here, so what I did over here is I'm using this formulation over here. So I already did one differentiation with respect to the source. And then if I want two-point function, I have to know what is, let's say, G3 as a function of G0. And to obtain that, I have to solve the linearized equations of motion. And I just told you what are the linearized equations of motion. And I still haven't told you how to extract the function. And that I'm going to do in the next slide. This is the boundary coordinate. So we have radius and three boundary coordinates. And this is, since this is plus the main wall, I can Fourier transform. And then in the cosmology case, we have C, and we have the spatial coordinates. And that Q over here is Fourier transform with respect to those, because again, I have the plus the main. So now we still need to extract correlators from the asymptotics of the linearized solution. And the most convenient way to do that is to work again with response functions. So again, we define canonical momenta, but now this is a radial canonical momenta. So we treat the radius as time, and we set up canonical formalism with in that fashion. So then we define the omega bar and epsilon bar in this fashion, relating the radial canonical momenta with the variables. And the two-point function, let's now consider the two-point function of the stress energy tensor. Now that on general grounds have the form I indicate over here. So this PIJKL is the projective the transit space this is. And this piece over here is the trace of the correlator. So if we want, that's true in any dimension. So if we want to compute the two-point function, the stress energy tensor, this has been A and B. And now if you, and then one can show in general that this A is going to be related to this E in bar, and this B is going to be related to the omega bar with this position. So this is the question. Yeah. Ah. Here. Yes. This is the radial canonical momentum. So I'm treating radius as time coordinate, and I'm following the same, let's say, procedure as canonical formalism. And this defines in particular radial canonical momentum. So it's like gamma dot. It's like the indication of gravity is the extrinsic curvature. This is related to the extrinsic curvature. And this piece here is so pi gamma is j, what k is the extrinsic curvature, and pi is zeta dot, but I need also the square root of gamma is a density.
Exactly.
But the E bar, why does it have indices? And why are all the conjugate momenta proportional to the Gamma ij. I mean, is the e-bar dependent on the indices, or?
No, e-bar doesn't have indices, because what I'm interested really is the functional derivative of pi bar with respect to gamma, because that's what it's going to give me in the correlator.
Okay.
In a sense, these are definitions of what is omega bar and epsilon bar. So I define them by these relations, and then I compute them.
Is the correlator in what state?
This is in this context. This is the trivial state. It's a vacuum, and I can generalize all of this to any other state I wish.
So like a Kernel state?
No, yeah, that's very easy to.
But why is momentum is proportional to the metric? I don't understand.
This is a definition of omega bar and epsilon bar. Yeah, it's not explicit. This is a definition. And then I can forget what this is.
You're not allowing anisotropies or something. Is that right? You're just allowing the scale to change. Is that the point? You're not.
This is true only at the linearized level. I'm only solving linearized equations.
Right, right.
And that's why this is only that. So there would be other pieces when I go to, let's say, three-point functions, etc. This is true only for linearized.
So it's only true for linearized scalar
and tensor perturbations.
It's
no, because that gamma is the tensor perturbation over there, right?
Yeah, so this is really the tensor perturbation.
But the thing on the right side is the tensor perturbation.
Yes, on the right.
And I think it's what you said, because of the symmetries.
But that doesn't make sense. Gamma ij dot is independent of gamma ij. There is no reason why it would be proportional to
the other. So the fact that it's regularity in the interior that fixes the relation between pi and gamma. It's the same thing I described over here. If this is not constrained, it's independent of that asymptotically, but once you have an exact solution, there's a precise relation between this and that, which is non-local. And that's the way one extracts the correlation functions of the dual theory. In a sense, this is at the heart of ABS-CFT. This is where the correlators are sitting. It's not a triviality, it's not an obvious statement.
In the Bunch Davis spec, you always mean?
In this case, in the trivial vacuum of the CFT.
It doesn't have to. I mean, this is the case he's presenting here, that all these formulae would go through.
Yeah.
I mean, he would get much more complicated the expression of what is canonical momentum. He does.
No,
different states which have different symmetries have of your best.
No. That part here is not going to change. This part is the same in all. You know, this all depends on doing the linearized approximation. So if I would go to the 3-point functions, I have to have something which is quadratic in the gamma. Because I have to depend on two words quadratically in the process.
So you cannot accept that any in your correlator, which doesn't respect symmetry. If the vacuum breaks on symmetry, then I expect that this Tingling correlator doesn't take this point.
No, this has nothing to do with symmetry. This relation has nothing to do with symmetry.
This
relation always.
That one.
This form only depends on the fact that you have a four-dimensional theory living in flat space-time. So the fact that that also does not depend on the form. So the A and the Bs are going to be different if I consider the theory in a different vacuum. But the fact that the correlator takes that form just depends on the fact that this expression over here is covariantly conserved. It just follows from the working dynamics. It does not depend on what is the state. So the different states are going to translate different relations into that. And this is going to be related on different function over here. It's still going to be the same relation, but this relation is universal. But it's not what will change, we change the value of e and omega.
Can you just remind us what those tensors are, the pi, I, j, k, l?
Yeah, yeah. So
those constant tensors or what?
No, this is a standard projection operator. So pi, j is delta I, j minus pi, 2 j over q squared. So this projection is the larger space, and this part here just gives the greatest part. if I compute, if I look at my J, this can be equal to B. If I look at the spaces, this can be to B.
And your I and J are just spatial indices?
And the I and J are just the indications of the domain of a wall that I'm discussing over here. I takes values of C, but we're doing Z equals 3. So we have three coordinates. So I takes X and Y.
So it looks like that's a result of Lorentz invariance.
Yeah, so this is the case for the background. So the fact that you have this relation just reflects the fact that the background is flat. So if I would have, let's say, trying to do the same thing with curved domain walls, then I would have to decompose it to the corresponding, let's say, useful components. These are the corrective useful components if I have one, two, three, plus six, right? And that's the relevant thing also for the application of found. Because we're going to relate that to cosmologies of flat slices. Okay. Good. So that's how you extract the correlators from doing ABS-CFT. So next, I'm going to start applying this to cosmology. Any more questions before I?
You just that second equation, the right hand side, that's a capital R.
This capital pi here is contracting the depth of this small pi.
So was it essential that the cosmology was flat?
No, I mean, no, it's not essential. You can do it also for
opera clause unit. Then I would have got different tensors.
These are going to be different tensors showing up. I mean, the technicalities are going to change, the methodology will not change. So now we're going to move on to apply this to cosmology. So what we're going to do is we're going to apply the analytic continuation I discussed earlier. And when we do this, we find a direct relation between power spectra and holographic two-point functions, and non-Gaussian, this is a holographic power point. So in this talk, I'm not going to discuss the second part, since I haven't really showed you the second order interpretations, etc. But we're going to discuss a bit more about the first part. So, in particular, we see that the power spectrum is just determined from the two point function. So, again, here I have the species unit, so you extract the species, you plug them in here, so it's directly, so the two-point function directly gives the power spectrum. So let's see this in some examples. So let's first consider the case of, actually, how much time do I have?
About 7 minutes.
Maybe we don't have to be strict.
How much time do you want?
Well, you know, this is another question. No, I mean, it's just a minute. I don't know what
it's giving 15.
Okay, so I guess I'll move quickly with the example. Okay, so now that would be a parallel case. In the case n equals 7 is what one would get if one continues the near horizon limit of the cycle of the two brains. In that case, we worked out the two-point function in this paper, and we got A and B, which is given by that expression. So then we do the analytic continuation just told you, and we get this result, which is precisely the result one finds in textbooks. Now, for a specifically the sitter, okay, that result essentially follows from area of work that starts from Moldacena's work in 2002 and instead of work from other people, including people in the audience. And in that case, the corresponding domain wall is explicitly yes, and the boundary here is either the formation of the CFT or the CFT in the previous state. And the slower parameter is related to the delta function. There's a lot more to be said, in particular, for example, the tensor power spectrum hasn't been worked previously, but in design of similar lines. But I'm not going to focus on this case at the start. So the next thing I would like to do is I would like to now move from the bug description to the CFD description. So this analytic combination that I described that maps the fluctuations from the main world spacetime to fluctuations of cosmology translates into a very concrete statement in quantum field theory, namely quantum field theory, what we continue is the rank of the gauge group. Not the coupling constant, the rank of the gauge group. And in addition, we continue the momenta in the fashion I indicate over here. So with these preliminaries, now I'm ready to tell you the proposal for this, for the holographic cosmology, and that has, in a sense, four steps. As I discussed in this talk, if you have an inflationary model which is based on a single scalar model, you simply map the domain wall via the domain wall cosmology correspondence. And as we discussed, the interesting cosmological cases have domain walls which have operational gauge gravity duality, which means that there is a global quantum field theory using the usual gauge gravity duality. And then the analytic continuation, which enters in this step, can be expressed entirely in terms of quantum field theory variables. So now we apply this analytic continuation to the quantum field theory dual to obtain the quantum field theory dual of the inflationary models. So that's the same thing in pictures.
And this thing has an imaginary number of degrees of freedom.
So, I mean, for me, I define operationally what I call pseudo quantum field theory in the way I describe over here. So I have a standard quantum field theory that has all the standard properties. And then I do the computation in that theory, which is unambiguous. And then once I have the results and once I have my correlator, I do the analytic continuations I described earlier. Perhaps there is a more fundamental perspective. In which case one uses the quantum field theory action as containing convex parameters, and that this is a fundamental object, and the results in different real domains would be applicable to the domain wall of cosmology. This is something that you explore. But should note that there is a supergravity realization of that correspondence and works precisely in this way. So in view of the time, I mean, I have a slide describing this, but in view of the time, I'm going to skip this. And I'm going to move to...
So can I
have yes.
a question? So n is a discrete number. I'm
yes.
not sure how analytically continuing it works.
It means precisely what I said. I have a formula of condensation n, and my quantum field has a large n limit.
But it's only it's only on discrete points.
So I'm only doing it perturbatively. So the perturbative expansion has a large n limit. So I have a linear case, which is 1 over n squared. Then there is a piece, which is only 1. And there is an n squared.
Et cetera. That's an equivalent.
And then I just plug it in here. And I will return to the conclusions to the more general case. What does it actually really mean? Okay, so far, what I've done, all the discussion was on the gravitational side. And I inferred a quantum field theory description using the usual ADS-CFT correspondence and analytic combination. But all the computations I've done them on the gravitational side. At the same time, this is actually, this is the theory. So what I've done so far, there's no value. So if you do the computation, do the analytic combinations, you get exactly the results on just by doing the cosmological computation. Now, when gravity is strongly coupled, the quantum field theory would be weakly coupled, so one may try to use this value. So this allows us to compute the late time behavior of the response functions, and therefore the power spectra and non-Gaussianics and other cosmological observables, when the early time behavior is strongly coupled. So this leads to a holographic phenomenology for cosmology. So I infer that there would be some quantum field theory description. Okay, currently I don't know what it is, but I can do phenomenology. So whatever it is, this boundary theory will be a combination of gauge fields, fairness, and scalars. and you should admit some large n expansion. So to extract the predictions for any given such theory, what I need to do is I need to compute the two-point function of the stress energy tensor and extract the coefficients, analytically continue the result, and insert it in the formula for the power spectrum. So then one can look for a holographic theory that models well observations.
I didn't understand why this represents the late time correlators.
It represents the late time because when the theory is strongly coupled, okay, this means I cannot trust the theory in the interior of the space-time, mm-hmm, but I can trust the theory, so the late-time behavior is mapped to the near-boundary behavior before the analytic combination, and that behavior is well under control, because this is, let's say, the long wavelength approximation. Then
that's where gravity is weakly coupled.
Yeah, but unless you know. But exactly for the coefficients I'm interested in, mainly
I need to know
the behavior is regular in the interior, and that's why I use the quantum filter.
When you say late time, it's late time compared to what? What time scale?
Okay. So late time means, and in the interior there is some quantum dynamics, which I don't know how to describe except in terms of quantum filtering behavior. But if I wait, let's say, long enough relative to the scale that sets the dynamics in the interior.
Would that be structure formation or what?
No, I think structure formation follows later. So this just gives me the primordial perturbations, and then from there on it's the standard description. So this is, in a sense, an alternative theory for the initial conditions for the primordial perturbations, which does not use, let's say, weakly coupled gravity. Mm-hmm. Okay. So as a starting point, one can consider the strong coupling version of the two cases we understand that weak coupling, namely asymptotically dissipative cosmologies and power law cosmologies. And in this talk, I'm going to focus on the latter. So in this case, the quantum field theories are supernormalizable quantum field theories in three dimensions that have a single dimension for coupling constant, for example, the Young-Mitz coupling constant. And in this case, the linear contribution to the two-point function is just one loop. This just follows from the fact that and suppose you have scalars, so this is going to be this is the stress energy tensor of the scalar, and if I want to compute this guy, so the linear order of this has two fields, so it's going to be a diagram like here where you have 5, 5, 5, 5. So this is a one loop. So and because it's one loop has an n squared, and because the stress energy tensor has dimension 3 in 3 dimensions, this just goes like 2π to the 3rd, just on dimensional ground. So a generic such holographic model has a scalar Lorentz spectrum. So how do you fix now the parameters of the theory in this model? So this model contains, in a sense, yeah, but the instant contains the Young-Mills coupling, and you start to specify what is the field quantum, how many vectors, how many scalars, how many fermions.
Okay, so this is not the same result that you would get if you do just the gravity calculation starting in the Bunch-Davis vacuum.
It's not the same result, no, because that assumes that you have, let's say, weakly coupled gravity a pair of times, where this assumes that you have stronger coupled dynamics that you cannot describe in terms of perturbations around Minkowski space and in the past around the bunch of things like this is different. It's a really different model.
So along those lines, I'm trying to reconcile. So you're finding these particular solutions, but you also said there's a one-to-one correspondence. So is there also correspondence? Is there domain wall solution that does have the standard cosmology all the way back, assuming
Yeah, so this are the ones I described earlier when I had the weakly coupled gravitational case. In that case, there was one correspondence, and then the quantum field of field is strongly coupled. So I couldn't use it in any meaningful way.
No.
So I had to use ADS-CFT to use the quantum field of field description. Well, now I'm really using the quantum field of field description.
And so the idea would be this is teaching us about other possible cosmologies that we might not have thought of
exactly.
If we were using the standard
right.
picture, but might be very fundamental.
Yes, yes. And actually, we'll see that it's not so hard to actually model the existing data, and they're very predictive, these models. So that's another message. And to show that this is predictive, let me explain first how to fix the parameters. So n is fixed by comparing with the amplitude of the power spectrum. So in the formula that I gave you earlier, it was the inverse powers of a and b that appear. And a and b are proportional to n squared. So this means that the smallness of the amplitude implies that n is really very large. It's something like 30,000. So really, the limit term is really a very, very good approximation. Now, the Young-Mills coupling constant is fixed by the tilt of the spectrum. More precisely, the form of the leading correction is just determined by dimensional analysis. So the leading correction is going to be, has the effective coupling constant square that has this momentum behavior. So in this series, the ones I'm discussing now, with the dimensional coupling constant, the scalar index runs, and this is the running. Now this is not, okay, the face of it, this is slightly unfavorable with respect to data because the data want a negative running. But at the same time, this is the last word from observations. And in any case, this is just one of this.
So, you have a Q in the denominator there in NS1?
Yeah, Q is in the denominator.
That's the momentum.
This is the absolute value of the momentum.
It looks like a very strong dependence.
But that's ns minus 1, so if the coefficient is small, then it's...
Oh.
Yeah. Okay.
But it doesn't look... What are the dimensions in there?
So this combination here is dimensionless. That's how I write it up.
But Q is not, so there must be a...
So the Young-Mills... So this is a theory with a dimensionful coupling constant. The Young-Mills coupling constant is dimensionful. And so this means that if you do perturbation in theory, then it's going to be defective. Coupling constant will appear, and the effective coupling constant is the dimensional combination of the dimensional coupling constant with the scale of the probe. And that scale is just the momentum of the correlator. Okay, now, the observations also constrain the tensor to scalar ratio, and in this case, one can compute what this is in this holographic theory, and it's given by a formula. So again, you compute your two-point function have over here, extract this, plug them in there, and this gives you the multi-scalar ratio. Now, in this model that I'm discussing now, the vectors and scalars have A equals B in leading order, and if you have a conformal scalar or fermion, has B equals 0. So this means by just using appropriate component, you can achieve this inequality. And in a sense, that's it. This fixes all parameters. Once we fix N and G units and self-funded, everything else just follows from uniquely from a straightforward computation. If you want non-Gaussian, it's just computing the three-point functions and see what you get, what value you get, and whether that's consistent with the observations or not.
Are you assuming that there is a ultraviolet point or not?
No, in this case, I'm not assuming. So in this case, I'm only using the fact that so this is a good theory for a certain regime of energy scale.
I understand, but so your metric, is it asymptotically BS or?
It's asymptotically power, well, in this case, it's asymptotically power law.
But then you also go away from the
conditions
because you only
take it
to one loop.
Yeah,
so
sure.
It's
not a kind of
dimension, so you keep
postponing
it to your.
So depending on the theory, it's going to be different, let's say, UV behavior.
But is that supposed to be analytically continued from some ABS type thing? Or?
Well, in this case, I'm doing the case which is not ABS. It's the case which is power law.
Yeah, yeah.
But you know, this the Gubbio behavior, I mean, this is super normalizable, so there's no problem really in the mean. Whether it's closer to fixed point or not, this depends on the field quantum and the specific properties, which we haven't explored yet.
I'm just worried about what that, whether the correspondence can be made.
No, the correspondence can be made, because the only thing, so I'm just using correspondence on the ADS side, which is completely rigorous. This predicts, the correspondence tells you what is the behavior near the boundary, and that translates by and of its combination, what is the late time behavior. So these models are extremely predictive because already, with current data, we can pretty much constrain the form of the model, and then with only this, two, three parameters, then we can move on to actually see what are the predictions about non-Gaussianism, et cetera. Okay, so
what did you get for it?
We didn't do it yet. And it would depend on which exactly field quantum you have.
Not the non-Gaussian energy suppressed by additional powers of one over.
Because natural logarithm
normalization of Carolli is also. Yeah, Solos and Golic and squared. So, yeah, there's nothing to do with that.
I think 3-point functions also
Golic
and
squared.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean,
they all have. So, just some other different thing. Okay, so since I'm out of time, let me quickly conclude. So, what I've done today, I presented a great proposal for holography cosmology. So, on gravities, we couple. This correctly reproduces standard results. And our gravity is strongly coupled. This defines new models that only have some filter description. And based on this, we initiated a holographic phenomenological approach to cosmology. Now, with respect to that, I told you a few things. First of all, generic holographic models lead to scale invariant spectrum. This is completely generic, just follows from the fact that the dimension of the stress and tensor is 3, which is generically, which is true in all dimensions, in space time dimension. And one can find models that fit all current observations, and this fixes the model between the M and G McNeils and constant field quantum. And further cosmological observables are computable with no further adjustable parameters. And that could be contrasted with the weakly coupled computations, where one really has, in a sense, a function worth of parameters. You have a whole potential that you can play with. So what's the outlook? Well, first of all, further develop this holographic phenomenology framework, see what kind of non-Gaussianities you can get, and what are the constraints that you have, etc. And even if one doesn't like the new models, I think there's still things to be learned, even if the regime where the gravities were pre-coupled, because we now have a direct link between the gravitational computations and quantum field theory computations. And this would lead to more efficient ways to perform bulk computations. And this is already a message, which I think is clear from the earlier work by Marcosana. Now, what one would like to do, one would like to understand better the meaning of this analytical delineation on the quantum field theory side. We do this through this, and what sense exists if they do. And you see the same things to analytically continue the color. And one would like also to understand better the analytical delineation in the bulk. There is a slide that I skipped because of the time. There is a relation with, if you do this in the bulk, there is a relation with so-called super supergravities and so-called M star and two star theories. Whether this has any implications is still to be explored. Although, in view of the discussions yesterday for crossing the W minus one barrier, this type of theory looks to me a good candidate to investigate that, because they do have generically loss-like states. And furthermore, I would like also to understand what are the implications of
this intuitive symmetry that seems to be generic from the cosmological model. Thank you.
I have a very easy question for you now that you've done all this hard stuff. Take the standard ADS5 press S5. All right, continue that thing at some de-Sitter 5.
Mm-hmm.
You know exactly the theory. What is the decay rate of that de-Sitter space?
Isn't it automatically zero? I mean, don't the, you know, just by analytic continuation.
Well, ADS is stable, of course, and.
But de-Sitter spaces aren't stable.
Well, that's, I guess it's an open controversy whether they're stable or not.
That's not really open. There's a theorem by Judah Quibin, Susskind, and Gohair that's about as tight as anything in this subject.
Well, Polyakov in various talks has been claiming to compute the artificial instability of some kind. I guess the question is what instability in what sense is unstable. So there's certainly, let's say, stability theorems from the mathematical side. So mathematicians also define the notion of stability. So if you start a little bit the initial conditions, what doesn't happen at late times? Is it still, let's say, stability de Sitter or not?
No, everybody knows that de Sitter space as a classical solution is eternal de Sitter space, but on the level.
No. But if you have the same, if you have a solution which asymptotes de Sitter, so this you get those, you give some initial conditions in some C surface, and then you can ask yourself: suppose now I change these initial conditions a little bit. What does that happen?
All of them are classical.
So this is a classical.
You're talking about perturbative linearized stability, but that's not the question.
This is not linear, right? What is just that?
No, you're talking about a
classical stability. Yes, this is a classical stability of the Sitter capital scalars that has been proven actually relatively recently, maybe a couple of years ago.
That's not the point.
That's
mechanically. Quantum mechanically, I don't know.
But I mean, haven't you just proven it by analytic continuation?
So, in the papers with Paul Thompson, we did want to argue that maybe that this implies stability, but I'm still not.
Does anybody know these people at Meroff and Giddings? They seem to suggest that there's not really a problem with having the Sitter space just last forever. It's just that maybe you have to be a little more subtle in how you do it, but I don't understand fully. Does that negate these Levin-Susskind arguments as well?
I don't hear any negation. I don't hear an argument. I know what the Clayman-Gohair-Susskind theorem says and how you prove it. It's simple. It's, you know, it's high school student mathematics. But I don't understand what these supposed refutations are supposed to consist of.
What's the theorem?
The theorem is that there is no unitary finite dimensional representation of the de Sitter group on a double Hilbert space. Am I stating it correctly? In such a way that the symmetries of de Sitter space are realized on the thermofield double of any Hilbert space in the way that it would have to be in order to match, in order to correctly realize the holographic dual of the Sitter space in the same way that the symmetries, in the same way that thermal anti-de Sitter space is realized on the thermofield double of the Hilbert space of n equals 4. So I don't know what this Giddings-Barrow proposal is, but it would have to be outside every framework we know for a holographic realization of a theory of gravity. But maybe it's something. Anyone? I mean, if it's such a great idea, somebody here at this holographic cosmology.
So about this analytic continuation between ADS and DS. So at the level of just doing free scalar fields on the Sitter, if you started with free scalar fields on anti-de Sitter and you took the two-point function, then you continue this. you will not get.
Yeah, so this is precisely, but that's not the analytic continuation I'm doing, right? Yeah, so what I'm continuing is the holographic gate. So I'm not doing quantum theory in the cipher. I'm doing, if I want to really work the terms, I'm just doing analyze the classical to the questions in the sitter, and then I extract the holographic data from using analytic
approximation. But in some approximation where we pick up a bulk field here, you give an approximation, it would not amount to continuing from ADS to DS.
I think there's some way to do that continuation to make the two-point function continue. I mean, you might just need to continue some additional parameter. And
but I mean, this is...
Like, maybe you need to take the mass to minus the mass or I times the
mass. Yeah, you may have to do the additional thing.
There's some way to make that work.
So I'm thinking about a why now problem. So it just happens to be that you have models that fit the current data with their parameters and don't have any more parameters for future data. So my conjecture is that if the future data conflict with your predictions, you'll be able to find other models in your framework to fit those. Why would it be such a coincidence that we're just at the right time in the history of cosmological data? So is that fair, or is there actually some deeper say that there's actually?
Well, I think at this point
these solutions are better and more, you know, obviously the correct ones.
Well, I think at this point it's probably kind of premature to answer the question because it's just not that. I mean, this is still just in the development, right? It's I don't understand, let's say, enough the implications. I just